Our spiritual themes of the month help us think about our individual and community lives in many ways. We're talking metaphorically with harvest about harvesting the fruits of our lives and knowing in many cases we do reap what we sow. We're reflecting upon our spiritual practices, which in many ways are like tending a garden. Here are a few questions from our wonderful curriculum designed by Margaret Kenevy on harvest, which you can find on our webpage. The small group ministries are using it. In your life, which seeds that you have planted are bearing fruit? Which plants in your life need to be tended? Or which branches need to be pruned to yield a good harvest for you, for your body, mind, and spirit? We have been blessed with very fine worship leadership this summer and this month. Eli Scarce talked about harvesting the courage and love to be a good, reliable parent in a complicated, unfair world. Reverend Daniel talked about giving thanks for a harvest of grace, even when the source is not always evident, and sometimes it does not seem reliable. And Sam Gugino preached about the importance of acts of compassion, which can grow more compassion in a too often callous and hurting world. And today we're focusing more on the literal harvest of foods grown in the earth. During rain, sun, heat, or cold, David Masumoto carries on the hard family tradition of farming, dragging a broken plow, deworming worms that seem invisible, dealing with lush masses of weeds, and reaping the payoff when the sweetness of that nectarine explodes in your mouth, and knowing that because of your labors, others are eating life-affirming food, life-sustaining food. Mr. Masumoto has worked hard over the years to reclaim and protect the family tradition, not only of farming, but also the legacy of living off the land by analyzing problems in the field, trying to find new ways, and failing and succeeding together with his dad. Around the globe, there is a collective ancient wisdom which comes from surviving from the fruits of the land and thriving through sharing. The majority of the earth's 7.3 billion people know through experience that one should not take for granted that the crops are going to come in. This is why Exodus instructs, "You shall observe the feast of the harvest, of the first fruits of your labors from what you sow of the field." We give thanks because food is not a guarantee, never has been. And we better not pretend that we are alone by simply fending for ourselves. So when you beat your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. Those last olives shall be for the alien or the orphan or the widow. It takes a village to distribute food properly in a human family. And in many tough ways that are sad for us, we seem to have gone off course from the compass provided by ancient harvest wisdom. Harvest of Empire is a well-known book in which Juan Gonzalez examines how large multinational corporations and governments often are collaborating to limit our choices of how we interact with food, from the growing to the purchasing to the eating. In exploring this harvest of empire, which I believe is a very good way to analyze it, next week we're going to focus more on people who work and grow and harvest the food. We're going to focus on immigration justice some next week because many immigrants are an important part of that entire process, which we need and benefit from. Today, we're talking about our direct relationship with food when we get it, in front, how we interact with the food. Massive quantities of processed foods too often disconnect us from the harvest in ways that are detrimental to body, mind, and spirit. And like many parts of life, when you have less money or time, it's harder. Poor folks have it harder in trying to break through some of these problems and get more choice. The manufactured food industry prioritizes the creation of repeat customers. They want us to buy and buy again and buy again and buy again and buy again. And to achieve this goal, they often work in ways similar to creating addiction. Addicts, that would be us. Michael Moss wrote a great book, which I can't recommend highly enough, Salt, Sugar, Fat. And in the book, one of the things he lays out is how state-of-the-art laboratories are created and companies pay top dollar to top talented, top trained people. And one of the things they're charged with doing, scientists, find the bliss point for each food product. Okay, it's a little overwhelming. Primarily, because we all know it from experience when you hear it. Primarily focusing on salt, sugar, and fat, the bliss point is the precise amount of sweetness or salt or fatty, no more and no less, that makes the food or drink most enjoyable. Not healthy. Not sustaining of life, enjoyable. Using best math regression formulas and scientific understandings of exploding your taste buds, they work to make the taste buds go cray-cray so you can have exquisite, exquisite feelings in your mouth and in your body, and you will want to buy more and more and more. And as a nation, we spent decades upset about the strategies and tactics of tobacco companies, and now the food industry is doing the same kinds of strategies and tactics. And if you think that's an overstatement, think we have a major, dangerous obesity crisis, which Philadelphia is in the top percentage-wise of people in communities struggling with dangerous obesity. Manufactured food. Catch, you probably know, I'm not assuming anyone doesn't know any of this, by the way. I know lots of people know a lot of it. Manufactured food is quite often made to make us feel hungrier. So sometime, but it might not be immediately, but some not so long period after, you're going to want more food, not feel satisfied. And one of the most devious tricks of the whole bliss point thing is the three bad boys, salt, sugar, and fat, usually decrease one, so you can use that in your marketing plan, increase the other. So this is a low-sugar item with lots of salt and fat. But they don't tell you what it has a lot of, but they tell you the one bad boy that's less in the marketing campaign. Karen Taff was in the industry, and now she writes about it from the outside, somewhat of a whistleblower, you could say. She writes, "I'm still shocked at what goes on in this country. Almost every single food has some mechanically sweetened component, such as honey wheat bread or honey mustard. So you have foods that used to be non-sweet, maybe had a slightly bitter component, but now is made a lot with sweetener. On average, Americans consume 71 pounds of caloric sweeteners each year. That's per person per day, 22 teaspoons of sugar. That's on average. And that's rough on the body, let alone the spirit and the mind. Not good. Talented author Michael Moss said, as he spoke with scientists about the way fat behaves, he couldn't resist drawing an analogy to the realm of narcotics. If sugar is the methamphetamine of processed food ingredients with high-speed blunt assault on the brains, then fat is the opiate, a smooth operator whose effects are less obvious but no less powerful. So the food industry, which is multi-hundred million, billion-dollar advertising, the way the grocery stores are set up, it's hard to get out of it. It's overwhelming. and daunting. And we are the bearers of good news. This is not the fire and brimstone church, so we can't leave it there, and we're not going to leave it there, and we're not leaving it there. It is over. It's hard. I always say it's like being a little fish swimming upstream, trying to get into local, organic, healthy foods. It's hard. You need time, money, effort, discipline, support. And so we highlight success that is happening. There are so many excellent efforts I know within people in this room and people we know and believe in at the macro and micro level. The church is a place where we highlight initiatives, share best practices. That's gospel. That's good news. Many folks, including people in this room, are like my colleague Lori, who has centered much of her ministry on gardening. You may not be at the scale she is. She lives in a rural environment. My Kristen grows lovely basil and tomatoes, which we enjoy. She's our gardener in the family. And many of you grow wonderful variety. If you're lucky enough to have access through your own place where you live or a community garden, and not everybody does, obviously another class issue playing out in this, but many folks are working. What about you, your family, your neighbor, your coworker, fellow USG, compadre, comadre, doing something to life-sustaining growth? Think about it. Those pepinos, cucumbers. It's nice to share. We live in the heart of Weaver's Way neighborhood. Weaver's Way is historically one of the earliest and strongest models of how to do healthy food for a neighborhood community. Philadelphia banned Tasty Cakes from the public schools. Important accomplishment, also an important statement, important reminder. This is the way we're going to go. We're going to try. Keep trying. Talking about compassion, Sam highlighted the growing trend of focusing on eating animals which were ethically treated. And we know with all of us, I said, when my wife talked me into joining Weaver's Way, back then you had the co-op, and I said, great, I want to work for free and pay more for my food. Why wouldn't I? That's great. Not everybody, now you don't have to volunteer, but you pay more even. But the point is, a lot of these places, you can get some good deals in Weaver's Way, and you don't have to be a member to shop there. And you can find places with ethically treated meat, but often it takes more money and more time, and that brings in class issues. So we have to continue being the place to raise up accomplishments also that are for wider trends of people. Where are the farmers' markets coming in with farmers who need some support, and we can buy a decent-priced product, and it's a victory for everybody? Let's keep telling these stories. David Masumoto is living a compelling life, growing life-giving foods, bringing life to fruition, he says, trying to do it without killing himself. And many of us are called to be doing that. How can we and our family and our friends and our church and people we care about be bringing life to fruition and sustaining life in realistic ways, one thing at a time in our days? It is tough. One more of the factors that we all know about at some level, but to keep in mind. Although manufactured foods make us feel hungrier, in reality in America, hunger is not the biggest driving factor of cravings. For most people, even poor folks, we rarely get in a situation where our body and brain are depleted of nutrients and actually needing replenishment. The drivers are emotional needs, taste, aroma, appearance, and texture. And that's what people who make hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars a year are creating. They want you to come back for that aroma of that manufactured MSG food. So many of us are already doing this and trying one day at a time. If you know aesthetics, aroma, vision is a player and you eat, when you go grocery shopping, try and have an array of colors in your basket. Rhubarb, different colored bell peppers, carrots, broccoli. That brings in different health properties, that, and then the different textures. Be mindful with your food. You know, light a candle or say a prayer of thanks before you eat. Try and think of where did it come from? Who worked on it? Who gave their sweat and blood and toil for this to happen? And that'll help your body. Your body will start to react differently in your triggers. We all know this, and we got to support each other because it's not easy. The quick, cheap way is often detrimental to body, mind, and spirit, and that's the way it's set up. That's the way it is now. Give up your powerlessness. One action at a time. Give up your powerlessness. Together, let's find ways to gratefully connect with harvest. Together, let's celebrate life and Mother Earth and all her bounty. Blessings be. Amen.